We'll be joined in a few minutes. No, in fact, we are joined now by Senator Bernie Sanders, who is a U.S. Senator representing Vermont. He's the longest-serving independent member of Congress in American history. He's focused on the shrinking middle class and the widening income gap in America, which is greater than any time since the Great Depression. He serves on five committees: budget, veterans, energy, environment, and health, education, labor, and pensions. He's the author of a brand new book, The Speech, A Historic Filibuster on Corporate Greed and the Decline of Our Middle Class. Thank you so much for joining us, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, thank you for having me on, Ian.
And we, of course, many of us heard the speech, and you delivered it, and boy, was that a marathon. How did you do it? I mean, talk about stamina.
Well, you know, I was not a happy camper in terms of the agreement that the president reached with the Republicans on taxes in December. It seemed to me that the president had given away almost the entire store. Maybe he got 5 or 10%. The Republicans got 90%. And the idea of continuing to give huge tax breaks for the very wealthiest people in this country, at the same time that the middle class is collapsing and poverty is increasing, just didn't make any sense to me at all. But the opportunity to do the filibuster also allowed me to speak not just about my disagreement with the agreement the president reached, but also to talk about what's been happening in this country for many, many years. And as you well know, Ian, many of your listeners know, the decline of the middle class didn't just begin after the Wall Street recession. It has been going on for many, many years. And the reality is that today we have millions of American workers who are working longer hours for lower wages than used to be the case. Incredibly, just in the last 10 years, we have lost somewhere around 50,000 factories. 50,000 factories have disappeared in America. Many of our good-paying manufacturing jobs have gone to China, other low-wage countries. Harder and harder for middle-class families to send their kids to college. I know out in California, you used to have one of the great universities in the world where 30 or 40 years ago, tuition was free or almost free, and now terrible things are happening there in terms of the university and the high cost that, that young people have to pay in order to get that education.
Sure, and we went from 1 to 43, first in the nation to 43rd in the nation.
Well, there you go. But it wasn't just the University of California, the City College of New York. The point being, 30, 40 years ago, we had great universities, great colleges, which were affordable or free. And now, after all of the increase in productivity, after all of the global economy, all the great developments, college is now unaffordable, middle class is in decline. And those are the kinds of questions that we as a nation have to converse about. But in the midst of the decline of the middle class, the increase in poverty, the loss of our manufacturing base, the greater difficulty that middle class families have to send their kids to college, the absolute horrendous situation regarding child care in America, where if you're an average working class family, it is almost impossible to afford decent quality child care. On and on it goes. In the midst of all of that, there's another phenomenon that's going on, which we do not talk about very much for kind of obvious reasons, and that is that the wealthiest people in our country have never had it so good. You have the crooks, and I use that word advisedly, on Wall Street who caused this recession, and their punishment is not to go to jail, but in fact to earn more money than they have ever earned before. You have the top 1% now earning about 23% out of every dollar earned in America. Top 1%. That is more than the bottom 50%. You have the top 0.1%. That's a small number of folks earning about 11% of all income in America. And the gap between the very, very rich and everybody else grows wider because in a recent 25-year period, about 80% of all new income went to the top 1%.
And again,
so that's the dynamic that you have.
And again, I'm speaking with Senator Bernie Sanders, whose brand new book, The Speech, and A Historic Filibuster on Corporate Greed and the Decline of Our Middle Class. The book is, of course, a distillation of that long filibuster speech in book form. And you actually did a filibuster in the spirit of Mr. Smith Came to Washington. Nowadays, of course, just the threat of a filibuster is enough to create this bizarre usurpation of democracy that we have,
yes,
where a threshold arbitrarily has been set by the Republicans, and they've managed to stall just about everything through the Senate. But I don't understand, Senator Sanders, why somehow, I know your book is the best tool that we have now to get the truth out, get some economic truths. Economics 101 tells you that when you're in a recession, you create jobs. You don't add to the unemployment. So how did this deficit hoax get foisted on the American people? And why is everybody talking about cutting budgets, which will result in the cuts of hundreds of thousands of jobs? It's so counterintuitive. I'm beginning to...
Well, Ian, we're really literally going back now to the Hoover-Roosevelt debate in this country in the early 1930s. And I absolutely agree with you. Now, the Republican so-called deficit reduction package will cost us, according to a number of economists, about 700,000 jobs. All right. In other words, if you're going to slash Head Start and you're going to throw hundreds of thousands of little kids off of Head Start, you're going to be also removing tens of thousands of their teachers and staff. If you're going to be cutting back on Social Security Administration, you're going to be throwing people out on the street. If you're going to cutting back on the EPA and making sure that large corporations, the coal industry, the oil industry, doesn't continue to pollute our air, our land, and our water, you're going to be throwing workers out on the street. So your point is well taken. Why in the midst of a recession, when real, and here's another point we have to make, Ian, you know, the official statistics tell us that unemployment is 8.99%. Real unemployment, if you include people who have given up looking for work, people who are working part-time, people who have seen a significant decline in their wages as they've gotten new jobs, having lost their old ones, real unemployment today is probably around 16%. And why in the midst of that disaster would you lay off hundreds and hundreds of thousands of workers is beyond my comprehension. So your point is well taken. And one of the things that I talk about in the book and that I talked about in the speech is that we can rebuild the middle class if we take some strong economic action in a number of areas. And one of them is we have in this country today a crumbling infrastructure. And I think everybody knows that. It's certainly true in Vermont, and I suspect it's true in almost every state in the country. That is our roads, our bridges, our tunnels, our wastewater systems, our clean water systems, our public transportation. China is exploding in terms of high-speed rail. We don't even have one high-speed rail system in this country. Amtrak is in poor shape. Subways around the country in urban areas are in poor shape. So we have now the opportunity to rebuild our infrastructure, make our country more efficient, more productive, and in the process create millions of jobs.
We have this surreal situation, though, where some state governors are handing back money for high-speed rail, one of whom, of course, is down in Florida, was the recipient of the largest civil fine in recent history, $1.7 billion for Medicaire defrauding Medicare. So, again...
Well, I have mixed feelings about that. I just spoke to the Secretary of Transportation the other day, Ray LaHood, and I said, well, if Florida and other states are interested in giving back their money, just move Vermont up the line. We'd be delighted to take that.
Well, but you have to admit, Senator Sanders, it's all a little surreal. And again, it is amazing to think that we are talking about deficits and not about stimulating the economy and getting people back to work.
And I will be talking about it. And I think the listeners should pay attention to what's going to be happening in the next few weeks in the Senate and in Congress, but in the Senate, I think, most significantly. And that is that if we are serious about moving toward a balanced budget, in addition to stimulating the economy, the idea that the only way you go forward is by cutting programs that the middle class and working families and low-income people and children and the sick need, that's the only way, is totally absurd. The idea that we are not raising the issue of revenue, the fact that the wealthiest people are doing phenomenally well, their tax rates, the effective tax rate for the richest people in this country now is lower than it has been in recorded in decades, and that is at about 16%. And you have heard, I think, Warren Buffett talk about the fact that this guy's a billionaire, his effective tax rate, what he pays, is lower than his secretary's. It's lower than, you know, nurses and teachers and cops and firemen. So, and then we have given them hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks. So the idea that you can proceed toward a deficit reduction without asking the wealthiest people in this country or the largest corporations whose effective tax rates have also gone down is totally insane.
But there's something else going on here that really troubles me. And Senator Sanders, again, the author of the speech, A Historic Filibuster on Corporate Greed and the Decline of Our Middle Class, a brand new book that has just been published, which we're offering up here today. It is a distillation of the entire filibuster in book form and very accessible, very readable, and very, very important for people to get these basic economic truths. But what concerns me, Senator Sanders, is that, and you're the only independent there in the Senate, is that the subtext for scapegoating public employees and trying to turn the private sector against the public sector in terms of unemployed public sector workers who are being downsized, and if they haven't lost their jobs, the new jobs, they get paid half of their old jobs, mostly with no benefits. This is going on, but a subtext for it is, of course, I think pretty apparent in Wisconsin. It's also a way to defund the Democratic Party. So I'm beginning to wonder whether there's something totalitarian going on here. We don't want a one-party system. I mean, there's an old joke, we need a third party because then we'll have two. But does it concern you?
Sure. That... Well, here's what you got. And I think, you know, we have to deal with some unpleasant truths that we don't talk about as a nation very much for obvious reasons, and they're not pleasant to talk about. And that is that right now you have a ruling class, and I use that word advisedly, has incredible wealth, incredible power, and who have made a decision many years ago that they're not going to try to reach social contracts with labor. They're not going to try to work things out. That despite the fact that the top 1% now earns more than the bottom 50%, that is not enough for these guys. They want more, more, more. And they are becoming very aggressive, not only in terms of economics, in terms of their willingness to throw American workers out on the street, even with profitable companies to move to China, etc., but they are becoming very aggressive politically. And that is, you're seeing that both in Washington today and you're seeing it in Wisconsin, Ohio, and other states. And what does that mean? It means that the attack on labor in Wisconsin has nothing to do with the deficit. It is a political attack against the strongest group of people who are able to oppose a right-wing Republican agenda, and that is organized labor. So using the excuse of trying to deal with the deficit, they are just trying to destroy their opposition. And that is what the Republican strategy is about. Does it concern me? Of course it concerns me. And what we have got to do is give all the support we can, not only to the unions in Wisconsin, but we have to do everything we can to build the union movement, see that more and more workers are organized so they're able to stand up for their rights in these very difficult times.
Well, you know, it used to be that our politics were in part about a debate between conservatism and progressivism. But if you nowadays, it's about crushing liberals, not debating them. I mean, that feels like Stalin to me.
Well, what it's about is an attack. I wouldn't look at it that way. I would look at it this way. I would see that the big money interests in this country feel that they are now in a position to really take it all and to kind of create a society where we move to an oligarchic form of government, where the rich and the powerful have virtually all of the political and economic power. So if you look at what's going on in Washington, there are efforts to destroy Social Security, voucherize, privatize Medicare, cut back on Medicaid. We talked about the high cost of college education, cutbacks in Pell Grants, cutbacks on the Women, Infant, and Children Nutrition Program. Ian, this is a program that provides nutrition, good nutrition, to pregnant women and their babies. Cut back on that, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the same time, you fight for huge tax breaks for the wealthiest people in the country who are already very rich. And then at the same time, you're working to break unions, so you are limiting the political opposition. And at the same time, you have a Citizens United Supreme Court decision, which now gives enormous increased power to corporate America, who can now contribute huge sums of money without disclosure into the political process. You add all of that stuff up, and what it tells you is you got a ruling class on the warpath trying to destroy the middle class and working families of this country. And the sooner we understand that and develop effective strategies to fight back, the better we will be.
Well, Senator Sanders, I thank you so much for joining us here today. I thank you for making this speech, this historic speech, and I thank you for putting it into this book form that makes it accessible so that the speech lives on, and the stand that you've taken will motivate people to join you and change our politics. Again, I thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Ian. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Hello again, I'm Ian Masters, and I was just speaking then with Senator Bernie Sanders, who is the longest-serving independent member of Congress in American history. He serves on five Senate committees: Budget, Veterans, Energy, Environment, and Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. And he made this historic filibuster against the compromise that the Democrats, that the Obama White House made with the Republicans over extending tax cuts for the richest 1% of Americans.